You're listening to DottoTech, helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. 20 years, the trusted voice of technology in Canada, Steve Dotto.
Coming to you a little later than normal, welcome to Dotto Tech. I'm Steve Dotto. Glad you're joining us after the Giants game. Art, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. That was an exciting game.
Yes, indeed. Hey, Art, do you feel like just another number?
Depends what you're talking about.
Well, you jumped on the Apple bandwagon the last couple of months, and you got yourself an iPhone 4S.
And an Apple TV.
Oh, you got the Apple TV, too.
I did.
We'll have to talk about that. But right now, I want to talk about the 4S. How do you feel being one of just 37 million others that got it this last quarter?
In a way, I feel good, because by the community, with FaceTime, right? So with my old phone, if anyone had a phone similar or the same as mine, it didn't mean anything.
Well, you had the most ridiculous phone ever.
But I'm just, whatever phone, like, it really doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
Right? So with an Apple...
Now you're part of a bigger, greater thing.
Yes, and I can do so many things with it. We can bump.
Where I'm going with this is Apple had their big press announcement yesterday, and they released their first quarter numbers, or their last quarter numbers. And they sold 37 million iPhones last quarter.
So some people can retire, is what you're saying.
Oh, people can. Yes. Apple now has $97 billion in their jeans, just waiting to spend somewhere.
I don't remember, during the Christmas season, I went to Oak Ridge, and they have an Apple store.
Yeah.
I don't remember it once being dead.
Apple stores are never dead.
No.
You go into the mall at any point, and the Apple stores are hopping. Well, the Apple store itself is such a beautiful concept. I don't think there's a better example of retail done well than the Apple Store. It's an event. It's easier for Apple to a certain extent, because they have such a limited product line that they're going to be selling there, to create a wonderful customer experience. But people just, it's just absolutely democratized the product. It's kind of staggering. Mm-hmm. Show today. You interested in what's coming up on the show?
Of course I am.
Well, let me tell you, we got Chris Gibson coming on from London Drugs, and we also have Matt Hartley, of the Financial Post, coming on. He's going to talk to us about CES. He's going to talk to us about the Apple news. He's going to fill us in with his take on the other big news of the week, which is, of course, the fact that RIM has made a change at the top. Co-founders have stepped down, and we have a new CEO at RIM. And it hasn't so far changed the perception, or the RIM stock fell by nearly 10% the first day and 3% yesterday. So it hasn't turned the tide yet for RIM. So, but hopefully things are going to stabilize there. And Matt will give us his take. He follows RIM more closely than almost anybody I know.
Does that mean Hamilton's not going to get a hockey team anytime soon?
I'm sure Belsilli still has very, very deep pockets himself. So he could certainly probably step up to the table. We also have, and this is something worth sticking around and listening to. It might not sound interesting, but trust me, it is. We're going to be talking to Chris Mulholland of Intuit. We're going to be talking about TurboTax, their online tax software. It's a great... Don't sigh at me.
Well, it's that time of the season. I hate tax season.
I know you hate tax season, but this makes it better. It's something that we all have to do, and this is a responsible way to do it. It costs us billions of dollars to process tax returns every year. If you use online tax software, we save the government time and money, we save ourselves time and money, and we make the process easier. It's not that bad. Have you ever done it online?
I have done it online, and it wasn't... A couple times it wasn't a great experience for me, but...
Why wasn't it a great experience for you? Because you owed money.
Well, that, and yeah, okay.
Okay.
I had never tried into it, so maybe this year will be the year that it's easy.
And great news, we're giving away a copy. We've got some copies to give away, so we're going to start this week giving away a copy of TurboTax online. You can sign up and you can get a free copy. That would be good.
I would like that. I want to sign up for that.
Well, you can sign up. And you know what? I'm going to make an exception this time. If you win, you
yes.
Yes, yes, yes. Joining us online from Edmonton, Alberta now, Chris Mulholland of Intuit. He's the head of product marketing for TurboTax here in Canada. How are you doing, Chris?
Doing great, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Now, is this the best time of the year? Is this for... Guys in the tax software business, is this like money time? This is the playoffs?
This is coming to prime time. now to the end of April is where we help the most Canadians.
And then in May 1st, are you depressed?
Yeah. We're usually smiling a little bit because that's when our holidays can begin.
There you go. Now, so TurboTax, for those of you who don't know, TurboTax used to be called QuickTax, but is it 2 years ago now that you made the change?
Yeah, so last year we made the official change from QuickTax to TurboTax, and I would say it went extremely smooth, and Canadians really embraced the new brand and the new name.
Now, I have long been a fan of online tax preparation for a variety of reasons. One, when I do my own tax return, I've recognized from day one how much easier it is to do. But doing your return online tends to lead people into doing their filing online, which ends up benefiting our entire community because it's so much less expensive for the government to process the online returns. We get our refunds so much faster. It just streamlines the whole process. And really, you guys are at the heart of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, you highlighted, you know, the NetFile services, which we offer with both our online and desktop products. And NetFile is the quickest way to get your return. Plus, it's green. A couple other reasons you may want to use tax software is value. It's generally a third of the price of going to a retail tax service or an accountant. I think that personally the biggest value is empowerment. You know, I can do it at home with a coffee in hand in my PJs any time of the day. I don't have to pack up and trudge through the snow and visit a strip mall to get someone else to do my taxes.
And it takes the pressure off to a certain extent. You know, when you create a file, for people that don't know the process, if you are doing an online return and using the web-based software, is you create an account and then you can start to enter your information. But you don't have to complete the tax return at that moment, unlike if you do go down to the mall. You can sit there, you can hit a roadblock, you can get tired, you can get bored, you can want to ask for some advice, you can stop, save off your work at that point, and then re-engage later that day or even a week later, and all of your content is still there.
Absolutely. Every click on, as we work through our interview and our product, saves your file. And as you suggest, some people realize that they're missing that one charitable slip that they didn't have available that they put in last July and need to go find it, and they can come back in 2, 3, 4 weeks and finish up their taxes whenever it's ready for them.
Now let's talk about the philosophy. I'm a big fan of the online software, so we'll kind of keep everything talking today about the online edition, which you can just go to TurboTax. Is it TurboTax.ca? You can just go there and you can begin the process. We should start with number one. You don't pay anything until you actually file a return, which is a huge benefit.
Yeah, TurboTax.ca is where you can start using our online software, and everyone can start using it for free right out of the gates. And as you work through the program, it really tailors the offering for your particular experience. So whether you're a student who has a part-time job or you're a small business, it'll tailor the experience for you based on the questions that and answers that you give.
And now in the pricing structure that people pay at the end. What are the different product offerings at the end?
So the pricing starts off at free. So anyone can start using our offer at free.
Free's good. Everybody likes free.
Yep. And students earning less than $20,000 a year get it free regardless.
Art, you're golden.
Yeah, and anyone with that lower income gets it free as well.
Mm-hmm.
Our most popular product is TurboTax Standard, which starts at $17.99.
Okay, and so that's to do a basic return. So now the process is it just like filling out the paper forms, or is it the interview based process where they ask you a series of questions and it kind of automatically builds itself?
Yeah, it's an interview based program, and last year we introduced a feature we call GPS guidance, which really steps you step by step through your return. You have the ability to set flags in different places in the in your tax return if you want to go back or you forgot that slip, and it shows you where you are at each stage of the return so you never get lost. We also have something called Life Changes Profiling. So as you walk through return, it asks you simple questions like, were you a student or were you employed throughout the process? So you don't have to understand tax language or a T-2202 form. It'll ask you in simple conversational language, stepping you step by step through the interview.
Now, is there any interactivity, because we're still at the point where I think people can still purchase some RRSPs, for example, and defer some of their taxes. Now, are you able to play the what if scenarios?
Absolutely. We have an RRSP optimizer within the product that you can go in and play with what if scenarios and see if you want to maximize your return for both you and your spouse.
Okay, well, that's always a good thing, and it also tell you whether it's worth borrowing money for your RSP if that's in the case. Now, the standard edition we've talked about, but you also have a home and business edition. Is that what size business is that ideal for?
It's really for any size business. It's we have a home and business edition, which is made for your unincorporated business, which are primarily small businesses. We also have a TurboTax incorporated businesses for folks that are doing a T2 return or something a bit more complex.
Okay, and right between those two is TurboTax Premier. Who's that one for?
So Premier is more for people that are doing investments and have rental properties, folks that want that additional guidance to work through investment portfolios, capital gains, and if they have some rental properties that they're gaining some revenue from. It would help them or guide them through their maximum return for that one.
Now, in your press releases that you guys sent forward this year, the big reason that I booked you into this interview is one change that you guys have added, which is you've changed the type of support that's offered. There's always been email or text-based support, but you guys have really upped the ante as far as the type of support that people can get, not just in the actual technical process of filing, but in also tax advice.
Yeah, we're really super excited about what we're bringing to the table, and we think it's going to change the game for tax preparation in Canada. We're offering free 24/7 tax advice from experienced tax pros throughout the tax season, and no one else can match us on that one.
And that's okay. So tell me how that works. I'm in the software. I've got a question. Am I emailing the question? Am I texting the question? Is it a phone call? How does it fit?
Sure. So on any page within the product, say you have a question about children's fitness credit, you can check our common questions database. And if you want more info, you click on one click, and we'll present you either with a chat window or a phone number, whatever's most comfortable and convenient for you. And you're chatting live with an experienced tax pro within minutes.
I think the text-based version of that alone is going to be outstanding. The phone-based is it's almost overkill. So how many, and who's first of all providing this support?
So we've got our own employees as well as some service providers that are helping us. Basically, this support is Canadian-based experienced tax pros that have, on average, 10 years of experience preparing taxes, on average, well over 1,000 tax returns each. We have chartered accountants, MBAs, CGAs, and a lot of designations on certified financial planners on board as well. So we're really trying to up the ante for the level of advice that we can provide to Canadians.
So that must have been quite the project to wrangle together that much tax advice.
Absolutely. We were very, very critical of the folks that we wanted to bring on board. We wanted them to represent TurboTax. It is the leader in the tax preparation market for Canada, and we wanted the right people representing our company, and we have a stellar crew of tax professionals on board.
And having done a number of public speaking engagements to accounts and CGAs and stuff, they can party. I got to tell you, these guys, they know how to party. So don't be surprised if the guy's got a great sense of humor at the other end of the text window there.
Yeah, come May 1st, we'll be partying.
You will be. So we finished our return, and the end of the day, we file it. You guys also have a new guarantee. Based on how accurate, or maybe it's not new, maybe it's been there forever, but you've got a guarantee on how accurate the return is going to be.
Yeah, absolutely. We have a few guarantees. Number one, satisfaction guarantee. If you're not happy with the product, you're not happy with the process, we put our money where our mouth is, and you get your money back if you're not happy with TurboTax. Our second guarantee is our maximum refund guarantee. We guarantee that you're going to get the maximum refund with TurboTax, and if you get a bigger refund elsewhere, we'll pay the difference. And what you're alluding to, Steve, is our accuracy guarantee. We stand behind our calculations. We stand behind our product. And if you receive any penalties or we'll basically cover any penalties or interest due to our inaccurate calculations. And we've never had one request for that guarantee. So we stand behind our product.
And how many returns have you guys filed?
We do millions of returns a year. Over 5 million Canadians last year used our software.
And, really? 5 million? Wow.
Yeah, and we're giving back over $5 billion in refunds back to Canadians.
Oh, that's a good number. I like that. Now, a couple of final accounting details. With the $17.99 for the base version, is that for a single return or is there multiple returns within a family for that price?
So it's a single return, $17.99, and any additional return, regardless of what product you start with online, is $17.99.
Okay, so it's $17.99 per return, but you don't pay that until you've completed the process and you're actually filing the return?
Once you file the return, that's when we ask you for your money.
Okay, and as far as the digital file, should you be printing it off yourself for your own records? What should customers be doing at the end?
We usually recommend for folks to store and back up their digital file, and then have available to print the file. Most customers we talk to like to print a PDF version of their tax return just for their own records. But we will store your tax information for you. So if you log back in, you could have access to your tax file again next year.
Now, if I've filed before with you or if I do it this year, can a lot of that basic information be saved so that to save me time when I go to do it next time?
Yeah, absolutely. We have a carry forward feature that if you worked with us last year, come back again this year. We remember your information and carry forward all your standard name, address, SIN number into next year's return, so you can hit the ground running.
Chris Mulholland, I think we've done a pretty comprehensive job of covering off the tax software for the year. It's not my favorite topic. I respect it all and all that sort of stuff, but it gives me the heebie-jeebies because I don't like doing it. But I gotta give you props for all the energy you guys put in. 5 million returns last year. That is outstanding. But even better news, you've given us some copies to give away. So each week for the next couple of weeks on DottoTech, we're going to be giving away a copy. So we have to thank you for that.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it. And we'll talk to you next year again about the same time, okay?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Steve.
Thank you, Chris. Have a good day.
You too.
Chris Mulholland, who's the head of product marketing for TurboTax here in Canada, has been my guest. I'm Steve Dotto. You're tuned in to DottoTech.
DottoTech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Do you have a comment or question for DottoTech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. DottoTech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Back to Steve, and Steve's joined by Chris Gibson from London Drugs. Chris, how are you doing?
Not too bad, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. Just back from CES.
Yep.
And the show was?
Huge. Massive this year.
And you guys from London Drugs, I know because I've gone down with you before on a boondoggle trip, which was awesome for me. But I saw the guys when I flew down, and I saw the guys when I flew back, and in between, you guys worked from dawn to dusk. I never saw, and they looked haggard when we flew home.
Typically in that, no different this show. It was a very busy show. There's lots to see, lots of meetings, lots of new things, new gadgets, all sorts of stuff down there.
Did you see anything that you wanted yourself outside of what you had to deal with as far as the work and purchasing for LD? Did you see anything that you said, I want one of those?
Oh, absolutely.
What?
Saw a line of Ferrari headsets, and in the center of the booth, they actually had the spinning Ferrari, which I would definitely take the car.
A real Ferrari.
A real Ferrari. But actually, these headsets were beautiful. They had carbon fiber, the Ferrari badging, and just high-end
oh, wow.
looking headsets and docks. Probably one of the neatest booths I saw there for headphones, for sure.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk headphones in a couple of weeks coming up, but right now I want to talk to you about the Galaxy Nexus phone, which was on display there. It's been out for a little while, and you guys are now selling it under several different flavors.
That's right. Basically, this is the Google phone. So it's made by Samsung, but Google basically had their hands in it the entire way.
Mm-hmm.
So this is running the native operating system. It's running Android 4.0. So this
is called Gingerbread?
This is called Ice Cream Sandwich.
Ice Cream Sandwich.
So a whole bunch of new features with this phone. It is an unlocked smartphone. So it's available on three different carriers at London Drugs, but it's basically if you go traveling, you can throw a SIM card in it wherever you go and get a local carrier.
Oh, okay. So that's unusual because we don't have the carriers in Canada have not offered very many unlocked phones. People traditionally, if they wanted their phone unlocked, had to go to some
Most of the carriers, after you've been on their network for a while, will unlock it for a fee.
Okay.
So usually $50 or $75, depending on what carrier you're with, will unlock your phone. But certainly makes traveling around the world a lot easier and cheaper.
having that
than having to pay those roaming fees.
Oh yeah, because you can just buy a chip. You can just buy basically a pay to play card in whatever market you're in, and mm-hmm. then you've got a phone, and then you, at least for calling out back home, and you can call forward your phone from your home, your regular one, to that number, and you can save a lot. Yeah,
certainly. Yeah,
it certainly makes a big difference. Okay, so it is ice cream sandwich. This is one of the flagship products that's going to go head to head competing with the iPhone, and of course we know. The Apple announcement this week, the iPhone just was stratospheric as far as its unit sales, off the charts.
Absolutely.
And so everybody else's work is cut out for them. But this one, Google seems to be getting their act together with the Android operating system on the phones, at least in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely. This version of Android 4.0, has all of the features that Android 3 and 2.3 had. For the smartphone functionality, which incorporates most things, the interconnectivity between mailing something to your camera, just as you go into all the features of the phone, they're pretty much seamlessly integrated. Mm-hmm. This is just so much cleaner and a nicer interface. They've redone the design of it. It's just a cool looking phone.
Now, my big criticism of the Android phones that I've used up until now, and I am using the earlier version of the Nexus phone mm-hmm. now, which I like best of all of the phones that I've used in the Android world, but the manufacturers were taking Android and they were kind of adding their own interface over the top. And for me, it bothered me because I had to, every time I picked up a different phone, I had to learn to use it.
Yeah.
And they didn't work the way that I expected always. And so I found my early experience with Android frustrating. But now they're starting to get, it seems to be standardizing, and they're starting to add some interface features that are making it much more, giving it much more personality itself, but also the manufacturers are trusting Google to provide the operating system and staying with it.
Absolutely. It's hard to perfect a good thing when Android's done such a good job now of getting it to the level that they're at. Manufacturers have taken a hands-off approach because this is, if you use this phone, which is basically designed by Google, Samsung's kept their hands off. They've just created the hardware for the phone. It's such a seamless user experience that they're starting to pay attention to it. And Google's come a long way in making the operating system seamless.
And there's a couple of features that people are really noticing, but the one big one is facial recognition now, which is what we're starting to see in their ads.
Yep. That's one of the biggest features they have to unlock your phone rather than entering a password or a sequence or whatever your unlock thing is. You basically hold the phone up to your face. It'll have a look at your face and it'll unlock based on your facial recognition, which is kind of cool.
Now, what we know that we're in trouble if it unlocks your face and then immediately takes you to a workout site if it sees that you're looking a little bit pudgy, or a meditation site if it looks like you're looking a little bit stressed. But it's not doing that at this point.
Not yet, no.
But that is very cool. Using the forward-facing, the front-facing camera, mm-hmm. and it basically maps the phone. And did you try it? Have you tried it and played with it, or have you?
I tried to try it on the CES floor. unfortunately, it's pretty noisy down there, and I couldn't get it to work successfully because you have to go in and set it up for you specifically.
Yes.
So it has to know you to recognize you first of all. But
well, I actually have some experience with it because we did play with this over Christmas.
Okay.
A good friend of mine, his son works for Google, and he had just come up for the Christmas holidays, had the new Nexus phone, was playing with it, so I got to play with it a little bit, and he was just setting up for facial recognition. I saw it happen for the first time, and it was fine. It worked just great.
Yeah.
And so that's impressive. The other thing that I liked was I started to see new interface options, things like, for instance, getting rid of junk email is a hassle. You have to click them all, and then you have to say find another menu to have it delete the mail. With this, you just swipe to the left and it deleted the email. You swipe to the right and opened the email. So it was a really nice. I saw some Apple-like consistency to the interface that was unique to Android, which I really liked.
Yep.
Now, the one thing I want to mention is all of the different carriers, their versions of this phone are not identical because Rogers, you can get it on the LTE network, which is super fast.
Well, if you put an LTE SIM card in it, it will support the LTE network,
yes.
But it is the same phone across
It's the same phone across them all. Yep. So as the other ones bring on LTE, this phone will be able to adapt.
Yep, switch it out for an LTE SIM card and you'll be able to get LTE.
Super. So that's the Galaxy Nexus phone. My guest, Chris Gibson from London Drugs, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Art, people want to go to the website. Why do they want to go to the website?
To see pictures of you.
There's pictures of me on the website, but that's not why people want to go. They want to go to listen to podcasts of previous shows if you missed anything, or to repeat any of the wonderful stuff that they've heard this week, or they want to go to win stuff. guess what we have to win?
Oh.
You can't remember. We have a copy of QuickTax we're giving away, or TurboTax.
I knew that.
I remember the TurboTax. And we still have, we have one more week before we give away the Moto Key Social, a phone by Motorola, which is a very cool semi-smartphone, but it looks almost like the BlackBerry. It's got the keyboard enhanced screen. It's a great phone for texting, email, for the simple things if you don't want the full-blown smartphone. And we're giving one away thanks to the folks at Motorola. So we've got two giveaways this week on Dotto Tech. You go to www.dottotech.com, and there you can enter. And next week, we're giving all this good stuff away.
Steve, Christmas was last month.
No, it's always Christmas on Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. You're listening to Dotto Tech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
As promised, joining us now live from Toronto is Matt Hartley, who is the technology columnist for the Financial Post. How are you doing, Matt?
Very well, Steve. How are you doing?
Good. On your way home late tonight.
It's been a long couple of days.
It has been a long couple of days. Lots of news happening, and lots of it with a solid Canadian focus. But let's start with Apple just having made their announcements of their quarter. They certainly had an outstanding quarter. Did you see it coming?
This was going to be a big quarter. Apple tends to have its biggest quarter in the final 3 months of the year every year, because that's when everybody goes out and picks up new iPods and new Mac computers for Christmas.
Yeah.
And so this is always the big Apple quarter, is the one that gets announced in January or February, right after the Christmas season. But there was an added wrinkle in it this year, in that this was also the quarter that saw the launch of the iPhone 4S. Now, Apple typically launches a new iPhone in the summertime, at least they have for the last few years. Only this year they missed the June-July window when they normally launch the new iPhone, and instead waited until October. So you had an extra couple of months of pent-up iPhone demand and all of these people looking to rush out and pick up a new iPhone. So not only was this a big holiday quarter, but you also had a record number of iPhones sold in the quarter. They sold 37 million iPhones in the 3 months between October and December.
That's staggering.
Just to put that in perspective for you, the best two quarters Apple has ever had selling iPhones before this were the previous two quarters, when they sold 20 million iPhones and 18 million iPhones. So if you take the two best quarters they've ever had selling iPhones, put them together, that's roughly what they sold in this most recent quarter.
Isn't
so
that
that's
something?
That's going to translate into something pretty remarkable.
It puts a lot of the industry pundits to shame, because there was a lot of disappointment with the 4S when it was first released. I guess they were wrong.
Yeah, it's funny, because everybody gets their hopes up really high for a new iPhone, and oh, maybe this one's going to have this new feature or that new feature. And when those features don't materialize, people think that it's some kind of a failure. But they fail to realize that for whatever reason, people really love the iPhone. And there is a loyal contingent of Apple fans out there who will buy a new one every year. And now you're getting into the cycle of the product, where people are coming up on 2- and 3-year contracts every couple of years on Apple, and now you've got people rolling over into new iPhones each year. So it's become quite the device for Apple. It's certainly their flagship product now. When you consider that Apple sold almost 40 million iPhones and only 5 million Mac computers, which was still a record, but not nearly what they're selling in the iPhone department.
And did you find it interesting in his comments in the press event, Tim Cook referenced Microsoft Windows Phone as the competition he was concerned about. He made no mention of Android. Did you find that interesting?
Well, they talked about Android a little bit. And the question was actually in response to an analyst. Now, the analyst asked, do you see the smartphone race shaping up to be a two-horse race between Apple and Android?
Oh, okay.
He said, and in turn, Tim Cook said, I don't see it as a two-horse race. He said, there's lots of other players. But Tim Cook is an industry veteran. This is a guy who used to work at Compaq. He's been around for a long time. Tim Cook's no dummy. He knows that Microsoft is always around. Microsoft, if it decides that it wants to get into a market, will spend billions of dollars to get into the market. Go ask Yahoo about how Microsoft wanted to get into search one way or another, and now Microsoft is the number two search provider. So, I mean, this is Microsoft's one of those companies, when your pockets are that deep, you're never really out of anything.
Okay. That's and the other, now they did mention a little bit about Apple TV that was brought up. What was the scuttlebutt on that?
Well, the question one of the analysts asked whether or not, sort of put the question to Tim Cook that everybody wants to know is whether or not Apple's actually working on a flat screen television to go up against the Samsungs and Sonys and LGs of the world. Apple has obviously said nothing about this. Steve Jobs talked about it a little bit in his biography, but there's still nothing to report there. Tim Cook said he wasn't going to make any announcements. He did say that last year in sort of in fiscal 2011, Apple sold 2.8 million Apple TV products, which is obviously, makes it kind of the runt of the litter within the Apple product family. But he did say that they sold 1.4 million Apple TVs in the holiday quarter. So that's, it looks as though sales of the Apple TV are going up.
Yeah.
But it definitely seems like it's still a niche product, and there's still a lot of people out there waiting for Apple to come out with some sort of a different kind of living room solution.
That'll be the drama that plays out this year. Now, set starkly against the success of the iPhone 4S and the happy news on the financial front from Apple is the sad news that's coming out of Canada with RIM, with Jim Balsillie and Mike Lazaridis stepping down. It was about time. Now, were you surprised that they looked within the company for their successor?
I'm not surprised. I think Wall Street was surprised, and I think you can look at the share price to see their surprise at this. I think Wall Street was certainly angling and hoping for an outsider. When we reported in early January that sources were telling us that Barb Stymiest was going to take over as chairman, the stock went up, and it doesn't take a genius to think that when you get a new chairman, potentially you get a new CEO. And I think Wall Street was kind of hoping that potentially RIM would be looking outside the organization for a new leader. Instead, they've gone with Thorsten Hines. He's the company's former COO, was spent over two decades at Siemens, the German company. And he comes into RIM and has decided that he's going to continue along the same strategic path that Mike and Jim have laid out. He's going to stick with, he's not thinking of breaking up the company and selling it. He's not thinking of a takeover. He wants to get BlackBerry 10 out into the market as quickly as possible. He's going to continue along with the playbook. So for now, it's going to be business as usual. But at the same time, if you really think about it, he doesn't have much of an option in that case. RIM really needs to get, has pinned all of its hopes on BlackBerry 10. So it really needs to, it can't really change the course of its strategy right now. This is the next generation operating system that's going to standardize the BlackBerry smartphones and the playbook all on one piece of software. And, RIM needs to get that done so that it can become relevant in the eyes of developers. And then if he wants to start departing from the Mike and Jim strategy at that point, then you might begin to see some changes in the way the company's run.
When we see the love affair that the public's got with the iPhone, with the massive number of unit sales that they've had in the last quarter, that's the darling of the development community at the same time, because is where the people go or where the developers are going to go. What does RIM have to do to get those developers online?
Well, there's a couple of things. Keep in mind why people like the iPhone. People like the iPhone for a couple of reasons. First of all, there's one development platform for iOS. Yeah, you got to customize some things for iPad or iPod or iPhone, but for the most part, you're dealing with one set of code. Ditto for Android. You can build something for Android, and it's going to work across a broad range of devices. You might have to do a little customization here or there, but for the most part, it's pretty standard. RIM's developer tools, for the most part, have been maligned for quite a long time by the developer community. RIM has started to standardize a lot of things, and BlackBerry 7, the current operating system that powers the current generation of BlackBerry smartphones, developers seem to like that more than they've liked previous versions of the developer kit. Now what you're going to see is once they go to BlackBerry 10, and you can use all of those sort of web-based developer tools, things like HTML5, to actually build applications, now you're moving into a different world where you can build an application for the playbook, for example, and it's going to work with minimal customization across a broad range of BlackBerry devices. That's going to make it much more appealing. But in the end, buzz is a tough thing in the tech world.
Yeah.
Right now, Android and Apple are all the rage. That's all anybody wants to talk about. But you got to remember, 2005, 2006, BlackBerry was the coolest thing out there. You know, every celebrity was snapped with a BlackBerry. Every politician had one. And it was just the coolest thing out there. So it's a difficult thing. It's, you know, buzz and fame are a fickle thing in the tech world.
Do you get a sense that Thorsten Hines is the kind of guy that can lead them back to the promised land?
To be totally honest with you, I've listened to one conference call with Thorsten Hines, and I've interviewed him once for about 10-15 minutes. So, you know, he seems like a very smart guy. He seems like he's got some interesting ideas. He does seem to think that RIM needs to get back its marketing mojo in the U.S., which I think is a very good thing.
Absolutely.
He plans to go out and hire a chief marketing officer, and that chief marketing officer's prime goal will be to make RIM relevant again in the consumer's eyes in the United States. It's a tall order, but he knows that he's got to go out and find someone that can do that. So the fact that he's identified that as a priority, I think, is a good positive step forward. And at the same time, if he can streamline decision-making processes within RIM, if he can you know, give the developers within the company and the engineers a good shot in the arm and show them that he's confident and that, you know, they're striking out, it's a new dawn for RIM, and people can get reinvigorated, then perhaps maybe we're looking at a different company in 6 months to a year.
It certainly should be interesting. We're going to take a quick break. I've got Matt Hartley on the phone from the Financial Post. I'm Steve Dotto, and you're tuned in to Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. You're listening to Dotto Tech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
We have Matt Hartley still online with us from the Financial Post. Matt, Apple last week had their announcement around reinventing the textbooks. They've got iBooks 2, which is taking a look at the education space. Maybe not the sexiest space in the world, but anybody who's been to college, anybody who's paid for college, knows the cost and the challenges surrounding textbooks. And Apple is taking dead aim at that market. And it's for that world, this could be a ground-shaking announcement.
I've seen stats that peg this market at anywhere between about $8 and $15 billion annually. There's a lot of money to be made in textbooks.
Oh.
And I think part of the thing here that's really, really interesting from Apple's perspective is that if you can turn the iPad into a must-have college device, the kind of thing that when you go away to school, you pick up an iPad and that becomes your textbook for the next 4 years. It's what you download all of your textbooks on, it's what you take your notes on, it records your lectures, it allows you to access your syllabi from your various courses and see your coursework. If it becomes the sort of indispensable center of the student world, the iPad goes from being a nice-to-have device to being something that every student in North America could pick up, and that is a huge, huge market for Apple. I think you're going to start seeing some pilot programs with a number of universities. That's something Apple has talked about. We'll probably start to see some in Canada over the next little while, and it's going to be very interesting because right now when you're a student, you know, when you go away to university, the pieces of tech you need a cell phone, some people might have an MP3 player, and you need a laptop. If you could have a tablet with an attachable keyboard, all of a sudden that becomes something that becomes a lot sexier for a student, and in many cases it's the same price as a small laptop. So it really does change the game, and this is something that Apple has clearly identified as a priority, and it'll be very interesting to see how this shakes out over the next couple of years.
So let's talk about the nuts and bolts. There was two kind of announcements that Apple made at this event. The one was for a authoring application called iBooks 2, which runs on Apple's operating system, which is very similar to Apple's other tools in their iWork series. It looks a lot like Keynote as you start to play with it. But basically, it's a textbook authoring system that allows you to import different sorts of content and write within it in order to create these interactive textbooks.
Yeah, well, it's actually called iBooks Author.
iBooks Author.
Yeah, it's the you're right. It's kind of like GarageBand or you know, one of the other tools for textbooks. What's really neat about it is that it's not just for textbooks. I mean, you could build any kind of an interactive ebook with this. And I think not only does this, you know, possibly turn the textbook industry on its ear. I mean, if you're a textbook, you know, if you're a professor at a certain university and the textbooks in your field just aren't up to snuff, and you have your own body of coursework that you'd like to turn into a textbook that the last, you know, and you want to make sure that you're completely up to date and you want to include YouTube videos and whatever else, then all of a sudden you've got this very cool tool that you can do that with. But this is going to allow people to create cookbooks, allow people to create photo books of their vacation. There's all kinds of things that you're going to
do. Professional development for sales training or marketing training or product training. Any instructional format at all. This gives you the ability to do all of your handout materials for presentations.
Yeah, the publishing industry is going to look at this, and they're going to have to take a long, hard look at what Apple's doing here. And this is going to be a very interesting market over the next little while. And it certainly changes the way that we can start thinking about the book.
Here's what surprised me is the list of people who they've got on board at the beginning, who I thought would be fighting them hammer and tong. You got Houghton Mifflin, Harcourt, McGraw-Hill, and Pearson. The major textbook publishers are all lining up and actually playing ball with Apple on this, despite the fact that on Apple's iTunes U, the textbooks are selling for in the neighborhood of $14.95 each. That's been kind of the benchmark that Apple set on price. This is for the same sort of content that these folks were getting $120, $130, $140 for their textbooks for. It surprises the heck out of me that they're willing to play ball at 10%.
True, except textbooks are heavy and expensive to ship. Printing costs are also very expensive. If you can continue to be a content licensor as a textbook provider and push these things out, and you also have to remember, not every student is going to pick up an iPad. Not every community college student is going to be able to do that. So there's going to be other areas of the market where the textbook manufacturers can continue to work on. But at the same time, if you can get in on the ground floor and you can help Apple shape this market, then you're in a much better position, you know, setting the terms of the agreement and figuring out how the licensing deals are going to work with Apple. So the textbook manufacturers kind of looked at this and said, okay, we can work with Apple on this and help them kind of establish this market for digital textbooks, or we can take the music industry approach and fight Apple on this and let Apple set the market, and then we have to play by Apple's rules. So I think in this case, you had a situation where the textbook manufacturers figured it would be better to work with Apple than against them.
And how many camps do you think will end up? Amazon has to ultimately play in this space, do they not?
You would think so. I think the best thing for students, and this is something I hope Apple, Amazon, and everyone else learns, is that being a student is expensive. Maybe you can't afford an iPad, but maybe you can get one of the lower-end tablets that's only $200. It would still be really nice to be able to get your courseware and your textbook on that. So here's hoping that these companies look at this, think of the students, and then price these things accordingly and make them open. Use the open EPUB or PDF formats so that these books can be read on multiple devices, not just Kindles and iPads.
Yeah, that's exactly the hope. And having paid for several university educations and many a bill to the bookstore, I wish it had been here a few years ago, as you did probably when you were doing your degree, I guess. Eh?
Yeah, when I think back to actually how much I spent on textbooks, it makes me want to cry.
Oh, it's staggering. And this isn't, as you said, this isn't just university. This is it's trickling down to high school. I had an interview, I had a conversation with the superintendent of the Vancouver School Board. Their textbook budget on an annual basis, just for a mid-sized school board, Vancouver's a large city in Canada, but hardly large by worldwide standards, you know, we're talking well over $7 million a year just in textbooks at a high school level. And it trickles down. It's as you said, it's a multi-billion dollar industry. And there's environmental impact. I mean, we have to look at that side as well. There's less transportation. There's less greenhouse gases created in the production and in the disposal of the materials. It's a win-win-win right across the board. So it's an exciting space, and it's probably worth a little more hullabaloo than what the industry's given it up to this point. You went to CES.
I did.
Was it good?
That's a good question. CES is really easy to rag on. It's a huge, bloated show. Everybody goes. There's 150,000 or 175,000 people crammed into this massive convention center. It's in Las Vegas, the city that defined excess in the United States. There's a lot of things to hate about CES. But at the same time, it's a really interesting week to see what everybody's working on. I mean, yes, some of the glamour is gone from CES. You're seeing Microsoft's not going to be keynoting next year. And over the last 2 years, Microsoft hasn't really, although they have held the opening keynote spot, have not launched any really new products. It's become, the tech world is quite often now taking the Apple approach to things. When they have a big, when a company has a big announcement they want to make, they're going to go out and do it on their own terms at a time that makes sense for them. They're not going to necessarily hold things back for CES, because you're cramming to try to get your product heard above all else over a two-day span at the beginning of the show, because by Thursday and Friday, a lot of the bigwigs have already gone home. So it's a very interesting event, you know, from that perspective and from a strategy perspective. But you know what? A lot of publications, you get to go down, you get to meet people that you wouldn't normally get to meet. Everybody's all in one spot. And, you know, you do get to see what the top technology companies in the world have been cooking up in their labs over the last year or two.
So as you got on the plane flying back from Vegas, what were the things that opened your eyes and made you think, okay, this is something that's significant?
Well, I think there were a few big stories that came out of CES. From a Canadian perspective, everybody likes to rip on the playbook, but I had a chance to play around with Playbook 2.0, which is the software update that comes out in February. And for all the ragging on RIM, this new piece of software is actually pretty good. I have a playbook at home. I don't use it very often, but I got to tell you, when this software update is available, I'm going to go into the IT department at the National Post and ask them to put my email and my account on this, because it's a device that I would use at home. You get the native email on this device, it's going to be very, very cool. It's a really interesting piece of software, and I think it's going to really help the playbook in that perspective. So that was one thing. I also think the sort of continued domination of Samsung is a pretty remarkable story. This is a huge company, and Samsung has decided that consumer electronics, specifically smartphones, is an area that they want to play in. And they've got the Galaxy Note, which is a new smartphone that's coming out, should be in Canada probably within the next month or two. And it's a 5.7-inch screen, or 5.4-inch screen, but it's about halfway between the size of a big Samsung smartphone and a Samsung tablet. So it's kind of like an oversized smartphone or a pint-sized tablet, depending on how you want to look at it. And it really kind of is an interesting move into these hybrid devices that don't really fit into any single device category, be it smartphone, tablet, laptop. And I think we're going to start seeing a blurring of the lines between these various product categories. And I think this is a really easy example of that blurring.
Matt, can I get you to hold on for a sec? We're just running a little bit late for break. I'm just going to take a quick break, and then we'll wrap up CES with you. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay, just going to hold on for 2 seconds. Matt Hartley is online with me from Toronto. He is, of course, the technology columnist for the National Post. I'm Steve Dotto, and you're tuned in to Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
Just a reminder that for all things Mac, people should head down to their local Mac station or visit Mac station online. They have courses. I wanted to talk about the course. You're new to the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
Art, have you signed up for one of the courses at Mac Station?
No, and I'm sure, like, I'm only using 10% of my brain. I'm pretty sure I'm only using 10% of the capacity
iPhone and
of
iOS
iPhone.
4. You want to sign up for the courses. They've got great introductory courses to using all of your Apple products, and that's, I think, one of the real hidden treasures of the good folks down at Mac Station are these courses that they give, which are free to people to come down and take. Introduction to the basic apps, introduction to the operating system. It's well worth your time, because if you learn the right way to do things and the potential from the beginning, you get so much more out of your product. So visit the good folks at MacStation.com to do that.
Do you have a comment or question for Dotto Tech? Visit our website at DottoTech.com and click on Contact Us. Dotto Tech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Got a few more minutes with Matt Hartley from the National Post. We were just talking about CES. He was giving us the highlights. Were there any other major highlights that besides the Samsung story?
I think the re-entrance of Nokia into the North American market is something that we should be taking a look at. They've obviously got the new Canadian CEO, Stephen Elop, and the new Lumia line of devices that run Windows Phone. You take Nokia, you add Microsoft with Windows Phone, and you put a lot of marketing dollars behind it, and Nokia is all of a sudden relevant again in the smartphone market in North America. So I think that's something to keep an eye on this year.
Do you know what? Everybody I talk to, when we talk smartphones, we all say the exact same thing when we talk about Windows Phone. And this is what we say. I like Windows Phone. And we all say it like we're surprised.
It's funny, because at a certain point you don't really expect Microsoft to be a hip, cool company, but when you take a look at the next version of Windows 8, you take a look at Windows Phone, you take a look at what they're doing with Xbox and Kinect. Microsoft's doing some pretty cool things right now.
And they do it with the guy that we all like to bust jokes about, with Steve Ballmer at the head. So it's great. It's,
you know, everybody likes to rip on Ballmer, but if you think about it, he has outlasted everybody.
He's just such a, you know, I have a feeling he's just such an upfront guy that there's no guile in him, and so he comes across that way, and he's defenseless against it almost to a certain extent.
I've interviewed him a couple of times, and he seems like the kind of guy that wears it all on his sleeve.
Yeah, I do believe that 100%. I wanted to leave with one last thing, because we've seen a lot of the icons of our industry leaving in recent weeks, and another one, Jerry Yang is resigning, one of the co-founders of Yahoo.
Yeah, it's just another chapter in the sort of sad decline of Yahoo. This was a company that really pioneered a lot of the web technologies that we became familiar with, web search, you know, the portal, all that kind of stuff. Jerry Yang was, you know, had really been pushed to the sides in Yahoo. At least that's what my sources tell me, that, you know, he was, ever since he turned down Microsoft's takeover offer several years ago, and the stock price never really recovered. You know, he was always kind of looking for a place to fit in there, and it'll be very interesting because, I mean, he is a tech visionary. I mean, he was a pioneer. It'll be very interesting to see what Jerry Yang does next, and I wish him well, and I really hope he lands on his feet and comes up with something else that really is disruptive and exciting.
His reputation took a big hit because of a business decision that had nothing to do with technology at the time, and he, as you say, he's a technologist at heart, so it'll be interesting to see where he does what he does do.
Absolutely.
Matt, thanks so much for your time. If you guys if anybody wants more information or wants to follow Matt, the Financial Post is the place, or the National Post. These columns are all over it. Matt Hartley, and your Twitter handle, The Hartley?
The Hartley.
The Hartley. I follow you all the time. You a little bit too much commentary about baseball. I'm just saying, just between you and me, okay?
That's not going to stop.
Oh, man. Taking liberties, man. Taking liberties. Matt Hartley, thanks so much for your time.
Have a good one.
And with that, Art, I think we've run out of time for this week's show. Did you learn something new?
Did I learn something new? Steve, I learn something new every week. I can't write a book report because I'm not very good at it.
Now, are you, because we're ending so late tonight, are you a little extra tired? Is that it? Is your energy level low?
I'm a night owl.
Are you a night owl?
Yeah.
You're good. So this is just the beginning of the evening for Art Factora?
Absolutely.
Hey, what's happening with stand-up comedy? When's your next performance?
I've got a big show coming up. I don't know if you heard about the Rio Theater.
Yes, I didn't hear about it.
Well, they finally got their liquor license.
Oh, good. But, did that help for your comedy act?
Well, no. I mean, probably. But what it means is that they're not allowed to show real movies anymore.
Okay.
It used to be kind of a mix of movies and live performance. Now, Liquor Board has said that they're going to fight it, but the Liquor Board said you can only do live performances if you're going to serve alcohol.
So when are you performing at the Rio?
Oh, so February 4th. Saturday, February 4th, come out and support the Rio Theater.
You can drink and watch art.
Yes, you could. That always helps.
Speaking of drinking and watching theater, I went to a play at the Metro Theater because we heard them promo the other week. They're doing the complete works of William Shakespeare, and Kathy Morrison directed it. She contacted me and said, Steve, come out and see the show. I love the Metro Theater. I used to do shows there. It's a great place to go to shows.
It is.
The complete works of William Shakespeare, a small 3-person cast. Hilarious. Those guys work their tails off. So I encourage people to come out. It's going to be on for, I think, one more week after this week. It's a great way to spend an evening. Affordable tickets, plenty of good seats available, and they've got a bar upstairs so you can have a wee nog at intermission. It's a wonderful place. The complete works of William Shakespeare at the Metro. So that's my pick of the week.
Nice.
Good stuff. That's all the time we have for this week's show. Reminder, drop by the website to enter the different giveaways. We're giving away both a copy of TurboTax and a MotoKey social phone next week on DottoTech, and we will see you then. Thanks, Art.
DottoTech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.